Hello, and welcome to The Fat Lip. Thank you for coming back again to listen to me. Today, we are doing something that I've been wanting to do since The Fat Lip began, and that is talking to a listener about her own story and her own journey in size acceptance. And so today I'm talking to Maura Penn. Maura is Canadian. She is in her mid-30s and she has two kids. But she grew up in sort of a non-traditional way and in a non-traditional place. And I thought her perspective was really interesting, and yet there was so much of what she experienced that was completely relatable and I think pretty universal for people that grew up as fat kids. And so here is my interview with Maura Penn. Hi, Maura.
Hi, Ash.
Okay, so guys, this is Maura Penn. She is a listener, and she wrote me last week to tell me about her story and her journey in body acceptance, and I found her story really compelling, and so we worked it out so that she could come on the show and tell it to you. So, Maura, let's just talk about, let's talk about your early life. So you had a really interesting childhood.
I did. In 1987, my dad moved us from Canada to Saudi Arabia, and it was, I just remember vividly arriving in the middle of the night and feeling this immense pressure that, you know, I would later come to learn was just desert heat.
Right.
And it was just totally unreal, and all of the sort of foliage and the scenery that I had known for, you know, 6 years, all of a sudden was replaced with these gigantic palm trees and little thorny bushes. And I mean, contrary to, I think, what so many people envision when they think of the Middle East, it's not all sand dunes.
Right.
But, you know, there's marvels of architecture and it's a very bustling, like, metropolis, I guess you would call Riyadh, which is the capital, which is where we were. And that was sort of the beginning of my journey throughout the Middle East.
So it's a little different than Canada.
Slightly, yeah.
So how did you find, so what was it like growing up in Saudi Arabia for you?
You know, it was really safe. We were on a compound. We absolutely had access to all parts of the city and the desert, and we spent a lot of time camping. There's a huge population of expatriates that live in the Middle East, so we very quickly joined the Canadians in Riyadh group, and you know, they provided events where people had things like Nanaimo bars, and, you know, there was maple syrup,
right.
And there was, you know, just all sort of the what I think are very Canadian markers brought over to the Middle East. So it was wonderful. It was, you know, you didn't lock your door at night. There was absolutely no fear of my younger brother and I being off on our own on the compound. The requirement, of course, I think a lot of my friends in Canada grew up with the rule that they had to be home by the time the streetlights came on.
Right.
And for me and my little brother, it was we had to be home by dusk prayer call. So that was, you know, generally between 5 and 5:30. And that's, you know, that it was fantastic. It was just, I would go back in a heartbeat.
That's amazing. Like, what a rich experience growing up.
Very.
Okay, so you said in your email that while you were on the compound, you started swimming regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me what that was like, you know, being a swimmer. And
it was just sort of the most accessible means of exercise that didn't raise your body temperature. Yeah, it was just, again, the pool was totally walled off even within the compound. There's a great sense of privacy there, and in turn, I suppose, a little bit of modesty, if you will. But, you know, there were no rules about what you were allowed to wear in the water. So I think I grew up in my bathing suit.
So you said in your email that you were, you know, always a little larger and, you know, you're very tall and you were always bigger and, but you were like a fish, like you swam faster than anyone anyway. But you still were bullied a little bit, right?
My brother and I were, we joined, the swim team for the hospital complex that my dad worked at. And, all of these compounds typically had, swim teams, and there would be competitions. The Middle East has a bit of a different, work week. So out there it's Saturday to Wednesday is a work week. And then Thursday, Friday, is the weekend. So Fridays were often taken up by competitions at one of the compound pools somewhere around Riyadh. But I was immediately targeted for my size, and I think
and that was by other Western people, right? Like, or was it, you know, Western people and people in the Middle East, from the Middle East?
I recall it being mostly Westerners, and mostly it was, there was a group of boys, most of whom were from England, and they were the absolute worst. And I remember one incident where we were just practicing for a swim meet, and I was in the pool, and these boys were swimming in one of the lanes next to me, and they were, you know, remarking on, you know, who let a whale into the pool, and, and you know, just sort of referencing large sea creatures, which on the one hand, I think at the time I formed a very negative opinion of whales, you know, and then, but then you come to realize that they're just so majestic and they move gracefully through the water. And, you know, I sort of wish that I could have understood that at the time, but that particular day, I remember that they just didn't let up at all. And I didn't typically go to my parents when that was happening. They've always armed me with the tools to be able to, you know, sort of dissolve a situation and diffuse it, if you will. But that particular day, I actually ended up calling out for my mom, which made these boys make fun of me even more, until her head popped over the top of the starting block. And, you know, she just sort of lectured them a little bit. And they eased up a fair amount at that point. But there, you know, there were still always snide remarks as I was walking up to the block to start a race. Or, you know, I was so terrified to be seen eating during a race. But it was important to fuel for some of the, these were 8-hour days.
Wow.
You know, so I would hide in the change room and eat. But yeah, you know, it was traumatic in a way. But it also, I think, you know, made me look at whales in a bit of a different way now.
And
I just felt sad. Like, I feel sad for these kids now who just lack any ability to understand differences.
Yeah, and it's interesting how universal these experiences are for people that grew up fat, you know? Like, everybody had that. Everybody, when they were in the pool, like, had the whale jokes or, you know? And it's sad to think that, you know, those boys probably grew up into adults that still act like that. And
I bet. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's... And I don't think that they were disciplined for that. I mean, my mom said her piece and sort of they backed off a bit, but you know, it always shocks me now as a parent. You know, I'm teaching my children that they can absolutely have an opinion and make an observation, but they need to be very, very careful about vocalizing that observation.
Right. Right.
You know, my son is larger. My daughter mm-hmm. is, very, very tall and broad, but not, you know, has very, very little, sort of substance to her body at this point. But, my son is being bullied for his weight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sort of brings you back to those situations, but I feel better armed now and to know that there is an acceptance movement that is occurring. It's groundbreaking and it's historical and it's, you know, I need him. He's only 9. So I guess it's a bit mm-hmm. hard for him to swallow what I'm giving him right now and
right.
Sort of turn that into a positive experience for himself. But you know, it's just vital to me at this point that I teach him to accept himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And the movement is growing and I feel like he's going to come up in a better world than we did. Like he's going to have it. I think it'll have it a little easier than we did because there's people like us that are working on it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So when did you come back to Canada then? How old were you?
I was 19. It was February of 2001. And, I was sort of scrounging in around Europe a little bit. And, I actually phoned my grandmother to ask her if I could borrow some money. And somehow in the 15-minute conversation I had with her, she talked me into getting on a plane and moving to Winnipeg, which, you know, is the focus of a number of jokes, right. Globally, I think, as well as in Canada. And, I think it was minus 47 with the wind chill the day I got off the plane.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. I had not experienced the sensation of my eyebrows freezing.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's, so I was 19. Yeah.
Okay. So then you spent like your teenage formative years still in Saudi Arabia then?
I did. In 1994, we moved from Saudi Arabia to Bahrain, which is this tiny little island off the east coast of Saudi Arabia, and it's connected to the Arabian Peninsula by a 26-kilometer causeway. Mm-hmm. And so that, at the time, in the mid-90s, Bahrain was very liberal, and, you know, while we were still living on a compound, it was, we could leave the compound without having to put it on an abaya. Which is, you know, these beautiful silk black, they almost look like dusters to me, but mm-hmm. they're just, you know, they're absolutely beautiful with some of the embroidery on them sometimes. But in Bahrain, that was just a non-issue and you could pretty much wear whatever you wanted. Wow. So I was there from 94 to 98 and then, I tried to come back to Canada for a little while to, get back into the Canadian school system because my ultimate goal was always to go to university. Mm-hmm. But I gained a lot of weight when I moved back to Canada.
Yeah.
And, I was living in a residence at a local, high school / university. And so, it was my first experience with cafeteria food and that was it was terrible. There was so much,
yeah.
Like I just, now that I think about it and with a better idea of nutrition, which, you know, as we know is always changing, you know, what you should and shouldn't mm-hmm. eat. But at the time, like, I think, you know, it was like deep fried pierogies and.
Right. Right. Which are delicious.
I know they're so good, but you know, like I realized that I wasn't like, I was definitely taking in more than I was expelling. So, mm-hmm. In terms of calories. So I put on an extraordinary amount of weight and, I then promptly moved back to the Middle East.
So how did you,
I spent another, 6 or 7 months there. And then I moved to Europe and bummed around Europe for a little while before, coming back to Canada.
Wow. That's amazing. So how did you find culturally, like, did you find your larger body more accepted in the Middle East than you felt it was in Canada, in the Western world?
I absolutely did. It goes back to, I think, sort of, even if you're looking at Western civilization, there are a number of sort of references in some of the history books that I've read about, and even I guess if you look at the art, you know, these women had curves, mm-hmm. and it very much implied wealth and health and right, childbearing right. ability, and that was perceived to be ideal in the Middle East at the time. I mean, I don't know if things are changing around there. I it's been so long since I've been there. Right. And I would imagine that with just sort of the evolution of, you know, these groups in the Middle East that are up and coming young kids who are embracing new ideology and philosophy and,
right.
and sort of taking a stand against what has been forced on them over the years. I wonder if the perception of my body size as being sort of the most attractive has shifted. Yeah. I don't, that's not something I know, but certainly as a, you know, a young girl and a teenager, very much so, what I felt attractive.
Right. Right. And so you got a lot of attention, and it was a different world than it would have been for you in Canada, or it was when you came back anyway.
Yes, it was. I mean, we spent summers back in Canada just, you know, to escape the heat mm-hmm. and the lack of sort of anything to do summertime in the Middle East. But, you know, I came home and I would go to the water park, the local mall, and you know, immediately the porker jokes would come out and the, you know,
yeah.
don't swim next to her, you'll get sucked into the whirlpool. And,
oh,
you know, just sort of comments from people that I didn't even know.
Yep. Yeah. It's brutal. And like, especially when you're young and still trying to figure out life and like who you want to be and how you feel about yourself. And it's so hard to hear those sorts of things. And like, you know, once you get into your 30s and you're kind of like, well, you start to not care what people think of you. But, you know, when you're 19 or 17 and you hear those things, it's so hard on you. And it shapes your perception of yourself in such a negative way, I think. And I think that we really need to work on teaching teenage girls that what people say about you or what people think about you, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's, again, you know, like I go back to this, having a daughter now, and recently she's become really focused on weight as a number. And startling to me, she's 11.
Wow.
Her dad is 6'4". I'm almost 6 feet tall. We are, you know, we're tall, broad people.
Right.
And she, you know, genetically has no choice.
But right, right.
She's just very much obsessed with comparing herself to her schoolmates. And
of course,
who are very small and, you know, you know, their parents aren't as tall as my husband and I. And it's, for me, being tall was always an issue as well, because you immediately become the target for people who believe that you are wanting to pick a fight, or that your size implies that you are trying to intimidate.
Right.
And I mean, I've often had people say to me, you're terrifying. And then we talk to you and you're not terrifying.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just, but then again, you can use your height to your advantage. And I am able to reach things on shelves. And, you know, like I do stick out in a crowd. So if you need to find me, you know, you just look for my head and I'm enjoying being tall now, and I'm starting to accept that it, you know, my size it's not indicative of my personality. It doesn't sort of mold, at least I would hope that it's not going to mold my attitude and my ability to get things done and be successful in sort of whichever endeavor I decide I'm going to undertake. And these are things that I realized when I heard my daughter talking about being fat. I thought, you know, I can sit here and explain these things to her verbally, but unless I'm role modeling.
Right, exactly.
On a daily basis, why would she ever take anything? I mean, they tune you out.
Right.
You know, she just... So it's very interesting to now be so aware of what's going on inside her little head and recognizing all of these markers that I hit growing up,
mm-hmm.
but wanting very much to... I don't want to force acceptance. That's such a terrible thing to do. But I'd like to facilitate that acceptance of herself earlier.
Yeah, of course.
I think I said in my email, you know, it's just been in the last couple of years that I've really started to accept myself. And you know, women like Tess Holliday and even Rebel Wilson and,
mm-hmm.
You know, these ladies in the media who are just so stunning and so talented. And I'm not looking at them as a size anymore.
Right.
So I'm hoping that I can facilitate that understanding for my daughter earlier than, you know, 30, which is
kind of
when I hit it.
Right. Have you read Lindy West's book Shrill?
I have not. I was listening to you discuss that on your last episode, and I've got that coming in the mail.
You should. It's hysterical on so many levels, but at one point she talks about how, you know, she was really struggling with her body, and for the longest time she, you know, thought she was like just this work in progress, and that someday she was going to be thin and then everything was going to be great. And eventually she started noticing that she could decide that, like, she could be okay now. And she just started, you know, looking at photos of fat women who were beautiful and successful and were everything she wanted to be and everything she already was, but she just couldn't get past, you know, like, she couldn't see the beauty in herself that she saw in these women. And I think she said that eventually she just decided to, that she was just going to objectively start finding fat bodies and her own fat body beautiful. And it just took, you know, like a lot of, she just had to, you know, look at bodies like hers and notice what she liked about them and notice how vibrant they were, and then sort of figure out how to apply those things to the body that she saw in the mirror. And I think that's so important. And I think that's probably the best thing you can do for yourself is, and then your daughter's going to see that and she's going to say, well, my mom looks like me and she looks awesome. So, and I think that the best thing you can do is just, you know, be a model for her and, you know, show her these other women that, you know, look like her that are doing amazing things and just look beautiful, and she's going to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. There's a TV show right now, I believe. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention this. My Giant Life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is women who are 6'4" and over. There, I think there's a gal on the show that's 6'8". And, you know, there was a flicker of absolute horror across my daughter's face when this woman's size was mentioned. She said, you know, do you think I'll be that tall? And I said, you might be. And all of a sudden she was a little more interested in watching this show, and
mm-hmm.
maybe she's very tuned into media right now.
Right.
And, you know, I'm hoping that body acceptance, regardless of size, I think body acceptance and the movement must become more mainstream. And I was listening to your episode last week, and as you said it, my heart just hurt to think that these comments were being made not only by the host, but mm-hmm. you know, that they're being a former, I mean, what is the terminology now? Former fat person? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I use fat person. I think fat is an innocuous word on its own. I mean, it's only hurtful and damaging when we make it hurtful, you know, or if we allow it to be. So I use fat.
Yeah. I think it's a great term.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just, it's vital that this spreads. And I mean, the work you're doing is just, you know, it's phenomenal and it's very inspiring. And
thank you.
To be able to address an email to somebody that I've never met, never had a conversation with, and to feel like it was just pouring out of me that night. Mm-hmm. I've got to let her know about this. It has to happen. It's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's definitely happening. And I think the movement is growing every day. And I think by the time your kids are in their mid 20s, like, it's going to be a whole different world for them. I hope that's what we're working towards because, you know, it's just, we can't allow another generation to, you know, grow up and feel the way we did. So I think it's going to be good. But the work you're doing is amazing as well. You know, raising kids and teaching them and being an example and, you know, just being like a great involved mom and thinking about these body image things for your kids. I mean, I think that like our generation and the generation before us, it was a whole different experience with parents. I mean, I interviewed my mom actually on a show a couple episodes ago, and you know, it was interesting because my mom and I never discussed body image my whole life growing up. And then when I interviewed her, I sort of learned that her whole life, even to now, she's still uncomfortable with her body, and it's something that she's never gotten over. And you know, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, I was bigger than her, but she never was negative about my body at all, but she still hated her body at the time. And I always thought she was thin and perfect. And it was so interesting to learn that she was struggling all that time and she still does. So I think the only thing we can do is, you know, work on ourselves and be a better example to further generations. And I think we're going to get there.
I think so. I listened to that episode with your mom, and the one thing that struck me was there was so much strength in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And there, yeah, you know,
she's a strong, just, stubborn lady.
and you know, then that is just, so like that's what the world needs is more strong, stubborn ladies who just refuse to back down. And you know, I don't ever want to have to tell my children to, you know, build a thicker skin. You know, I don't want that. I don't want them to be this, you know, these impenetrable people who experience less emotion, I think, that way. And that's, I mean, I live my life with emotion. That's, you know, that's me, much to the chagrin, I think, of my parents, but it's so important for me that they are just armed with the resources and the tools that they can take these negative comments and turn them into, you know, they can be positive and they can disarm these people by, you know, I was teaching my son the other day. I said, you know, if people are making fun of your weight, one tactic I learned, I just stood there and stared at them.
Right.
And I would stare and I would stare and I would, you know, sometimes you tilt your head And you just sort of stare straight into this person's eyes, and without saying a word. Sometimes people, you know, they would all of a sudden they would look very, very uncomfortable.
And
I felt that I had sort of then rebalanced this situation that I often didn't ask to be in. And it seemed to work.
Yeah. So, I think,
you know, I still
you know, employ that tactic every day when people stare or make comments. I think that, you know, turning around and acknowledging that you see this person and that you can see what they're doing and that you're going to live your life anyway, I think that's really powerful. And like, if you want to get into a fight, if you think that's what, you know, is gonna make your day better, if you want to, you know, argue back with them, that's cool too. But for me, I just think, you know, turning around and like giving him that look that says, I see you and I know what you're doing. I think that's so powerful and it works so well most of the time. So,
yeah.
Well, you're doing great work with your kids, it sounds like. So I'm super proud of you. And I hope that you continue to listen to the show. But it was so good to talk to you. And I hope that you consider coming on the show again, because I would love to talk to you again, you know, down the line and see how things are going with your kids and everything.
Absolutely. I'm so grateful that you connected with me in this way. And it's just sort of further ignited my desire to move forward with this and try to shed the old skin, if you will. And I just can't thank you enough for the work you're doing. And
well, you're so welcome. Marvelous. And I'm so happy to be doing it. And I'm so happy to be helping you in some way.
Thank you so much, Maura, for coming on the show today. You were delightful, and not just because you said nice things about me, but I love talking to you, and I do hope that we get to talk again soon. The music you heard at the top of the show and the music that's playing right now are by Citizen Star Crusher, a friend of the show and a friend of the movement, and you should check out his SoundCloud for more of his work, and he has a new album coming out soon, so definitely check that out when it comes out. And our shout out of the week is Dr. Kwame, one of our Patreon patrons and a dear friend of mine that I've known for a long, long time. And he is zesty and wonderful, and I'm so glad to have him around. If you enjoyed the show today and you have a few minutes, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. It doesn't seem like it matters, but it really does, because the more reviews we have and the better they are, the more people can see us. And that's really important. And be sure to follow us on social media. Go to thefatlip.com. Visit the Patreon page, because we need your clicks. Those are important. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.